obviously I will then play the song on the radio, okay. So it'll be slightly edited. And if,
okay.
You know, if, and I guess that's it. I just have this. This is my menu, sort
okay.
of. Well, hi, Lori.
Hi.
Look out, baby, I'm at high tide. I've got 105 fever, and it's high tide. That's such a powerful song, a beautiful red dress. Is that how you're feeling right now, generally? I mean, mentally? Like that
high
you're,
tide?
Yeah, like power, just all about power.
Well,
seems to be.
That song is really fun to sing live. It's a very, very different version. I think there's about 5 songs in the performance, which is called Empty Places, from the record. And they're, since it's a solo show, they're real different arrangements. They're much simpler, really.
Different than on the record?
On the record, uh-huh. Yeah.
Good.
And I, in a lot of ways, I kind of like them better. Or maybe it's just that I like seeing people, you know, while music is going on. I think I like that a lot. The first time, I was in this Catholic girls' school a few days ago, because I've been trying to do things in smaller places, and I did that song, Beautiful Red Dress, there. And it was a very odd feeling, because the nuns are sitting there, and the girls are like 15. And
did they get it?
Yeah, they absolutely got it. They were very, they were very interesting characters. Because, you know, I've just been thinking a lot about Jesse Helms and all of that, and I just want to know more than anything who's going to get hit by this, and I have a feeling that it would be young artists, people who are just starting out, kind of mm-hmm. going, should I really say that, or is that not a good idea?
I know, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what kind of a problem it is. I mean, I can kind of theorize and, you know, talk to my little sister or something like that and mm-hmm. say, you know, what, but I really want to find out by meeting and talking to a lot of young artists what's on their minds about it. Because it would be a terrible tragedy, really, to have that affect people. And I think that's a possibility.
Well, it can't help but affecting art mm-hmm. right now, because the people that feel that they need funding and they feel they can't do it without funding, they're going to quote, clean up their act, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the kitchen with this Annie Sprinkleson, mm-hmm. you know? That was wild,
right.
You know? So...
Yeah, I didn't catch up with the developments. I was just leaving when they were faxing pages and pages of Annie Sprinkle stuff.
I don't know what the outcome was, but the kitchen just denied that that they directly funded her, you know,
mm-hmm.
but of course it's all funneled in and
mm-hmm.
all these, but everyone has to be brave, you know, not knuckle under, and
mm-hmm.
if necessary, not be funded,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's a matter of giving in. It's like blackmail or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're saying is right. I think the artists just, we can't give in. It's just insidious,
mm-hmm.
I suppose.
And of course the whole idea of not be funded is a pretty hard one too, because it's so hard to get a project off the ground without some help.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, and I had several NEA grants that were just real crucial for what I did. This single that I put out 8 years ago, Superman, was a National Endowment money grant. I mean, and I couldn't have done that without that kind of help. You just don't, if you're an artist, you don't just say, hey, I'll spend a few thousand dollars.
I know.
You don't have a few
That's
thousand
why I don't
dollars.
Have any CD, you know, I'm not whining. I am whining.
Good, whine
but,
a little bit.
That's why, it's okay. You know, I just, a lot of times money stops me, but I try not to let it and just do things on a smaller scale,
mm-hmm.
that's all.
Well, that can be cool too. You know?
That's what I have decided I have to do. And then when it can go bigger, it can go bigger, but I don't stop doing it, you know.
Yeah. That's a very important point that you're making, too, because a lot of stuff is just hopelessly overproduced. You look at some art projects and you go, boy, that just isn't worth it. And then you look at one little pencil drawing and you go, oh, man, that's breaking my heart.
You know? I know.
So it's not the money, but you're right, it's the attitude, you know. And I don't know.
Well, talking about not, you know, underproduced, The Dream Before broke my heart. It is so beautiful. It is incredible.
That thing used to have a lot of stuff on it. Oh, you know, man. It had horns, keyboards, all of this, drums. And when I was mixing, I thought, hey, I don't think we need these keyboards.
It's a heartbreaker. It's really gorgeous. You enjoying working with Bobby McFerrin?
Yeah. Actually, I did that here at Fantasy out in Berkeley.
Uh-huh. Sure. I live near there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And also worked with him on Monkey's Paw at Fantasy. That's fun.
Yeah, and I was reading, you know, the personnel. I mean, I'm just about blind, and I didn't even have my magnifying glass, but I read the personnel and all the records. And Peter Shearer, is he the guy from Switzerland?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew him from Mills. Mm-hmm. I came out here in 79.
That's right. He was working at Mills for
a while. Yeah, and Blue, I know from Mills.
Right.
Blue is a genius.
Yes, he is.
And Bill Buchan, met him in Indonesia, Bill and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Neat guy. Yeah, so you've got lots of wonderful people working with you.
Yeah. It was really, it was fun putting that project together because it was just going to be a bunch of film scores, really, at the beginning. And I thought, you know, I've got this record contract that goes into the 21st century. Once in a while, you got to sort of throw something in its direction. So I thought, let's just add a couple little words to these film scores. It takes 6 weeks. 2 years later, you know, there was another completely different project, you know, and I wasn't something that I had planned on doing. And I always admire people who have, like, a plan, like Paul Simon or David Byrne, you know, do Brazil or do South Africa. And I'm just so much sloppier than
well,
that.
Well, that's not, I would think you should call it serendipitous instead of sloppy. I don't think you're sloppy. I wouldn't worry about
Well,
it.
I guess I'd like the word sloppy. I mean,
oh, okay.
I appreciate the things that just come in and just go, wow.
I think
the ends aren't tied up, you know.
Sure.
Just,
I think some of the best things happen that way.
Yeah.
I was thrilled, just to get back to Beautiful Red Dress for a minute, I was just thrilled to, you know, hear the, talking about women's salaries and women shouldn't be president because they, you know, they go off their rocker sometimes. I love that you're bringing up that kind of stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fun.
Well, it's funny for
a change,
a culture that's so obsessed with sex, it never really talks about it.
No, it sure doesn't.
In a way, is pretty interesting, you know. Or I suppose when it does, it's just so veiled and uninteresting.
Well, I do in my work, and I never hear the end of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah, but that's wonderful imagery. Do you do that with imagery? I mean, will we see that? Are we going to see?
All the songs have, that's not true. One of them doesn't have anything. But
Beautiful Red Dress.
Yeah, that's got a lot of, it starts out in the ladies' room in the, down at the bus terminal, actually. So
Great.
It's got a lot of this real slimy kind of green tile.
Mm.
There are lots of real big screens, and I shot thousands of slides for this thing, and a bunch of films, and I did a lot of computer animation and stuff. Actually worked with a board that was produced here by a group called A Squared, and it's a really nice system of digitizing images. And then I also did a lot of... you know, I just sit down for a while and start drawing bluebirds for no reason. You know, just try to get them really animated and get their feathers flying off at the right rate. You know, I spend like 5 days doing that at the computer.
Yeah.
With no idea whether I'd use them or not, but I really like to work that way and not get the big grand scheme and then try to jam things into it, but to let it evolve more naturally. So, for example, in Beautiful Red Dress, there's these pictures of these green tiles on all of these big surfaces, and it's stuff that I shot in my house. Actually, that's the bathroom tile in my house, and it's very cozy because, you know, you look back and it's like, well, it's like you're 2 inches tall in your bathroom, but still, it feels very homey.
Hiawatha made me cry. That's a really, the lyrics are beautiful and sad, and you know, it seems like some kind of a ancestor of, not ancestor, but comes afterwards.
Descendant
of Superman, in a way, you know.
That was I really love Longfellow and the cadences he was trying to get. You know, here's a 19th century poet trying to do Indian
right.
rhythms, and that's already preposterous.
Yeah.
You know, and in the Midwest where I grew up, the only legacy from that was, you know, Camp Kitchikumi and Camp Hiawatha.
Yeah, I went to Camp Hiawatha
right.
my whole life,
uh-huh.
every summer.
Uh-huh. And, you know, the lanyards and the birch bark
yeah.
kind of things. And that's all there is, except for the Hams beer commercials. And they had those in the 50s, and they were little beavers kind of whacking their tails on hollow logs, and they were going, from the land of sky blue waters. And then the Indian maidens come in and go, waters, comes the beer refreshing, Hams. You know, and I thought, well, it's time to rewrite some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, get a few other heroes in here, too.
All Along the Watchtower?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you like him?
Mm-hmm.
I do, too. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. He's the one, you know, he gives me hope, because he just stands there and sings.
Yeah.
I love it that you're singing, by the way. I always thought you were a good singer, anyway. I didn't think you croaked. I think that's extremely self-effacing, but...
The thing about Dylan songs, I guess, is I don't think I know... You know, most of the people I know, I think, would say, you know, that there was a certain time in their life when they heard a Dylan song and it helped them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were just at some point in their life and they heard that thing and it made it a little easier for them to do something. You know, and I've really gotten to that point where I just have almost zero interest in making the next logical avant-garde step. You know, I find
good.
That couldn't be more boring. You know?
Hey, you know, you just do what you do. You just have to do what you do. And I read somewhere that you said there's always, I think it was in Mark Derry's article maybe, in Keyboard, that there's always going to be someone out there doing something. And
plenty of people have got, for example, the pop thing covered. They know how to write really good pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, I mean, the next project I do is going to be a long radio play.
Oh, good.
Uh-huh. And I just, you know, it's not like I think of myself at all as a singer now. I think I learned a couple of things. But I just, I like changing stuff around and trying to do something that's a kind of a challenge
mm-hmm.
for me. And,
well, I think that that one is just, one is an artist, you know, and if one is. And it doesn't, you don't have to be stuck into some slot or some category. And, you know...
Well, that's the deal here. That's the way...
But it's not hurting Warner Brothers any... Like, they don't seem to mind. You just do what you do, and it seems to work out for everybody, including your audience, you know? I was just, like, blown away by the fact that you're very, very funny, and you care. So it's a good combination, because it's... instead of standing up there on the soapbox and moralizing... You know?
Yeah, that really works.
And being didactic.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, that really works. And the brimstone and fire, or moralizing, or being didactic, like, I'm going to teach you something.
See, I had a grandmother
you know?
Who did that.
I was going to ask you, about religion and things.
Yeah, she was a real hellfire type. And she was a real character. She went over to Japan as a missionary. And she was supposed to, like, convert these Buddhists who, you know, kind of been doing this on this island for quite a while to kind of a Southern Hellfire Baptist thing. And she got over there, and they just weren't getting it, you know. But one of the things they loved was she made the most beautiful hats. They were things that had roses and violets and veils and things
right.
dripping down. And the Japanese people that she was working with looked at these hats and just were, those are lovely. And she also liked to garden. And she was overwhelmed by the kinds of things they were growing and doing.
Well, so they were cross-educating
yeah. so
each other.
Yeah, so she taught them how to make hats, and they taught her a few things about Japanese gardening. And that was the exchange.
I love it.
You know, because people want to know more about what they love. And it's very hard, if not impossible, to really change people's minds. And I think that that you have to find out what people already want and need, and then look at that. And sometimes that's not too obvious, especially in this culture, where you know, the buddy film is the most popular format, and the pop song is the most, you know, used thing. And it kind of goes, "Is this what really people want?" And you think, well, maybe I'm going to try something else. I mean, that's what I admired about Robert Mapplethorpe, really, was that he really looked at something very different than that and said, well, what's making this place run? You know, I mean, for all the sex that's around in the air, you know, as we were saying before, it's not really looked at in any other way, especially in its relations to religion. What do those two things, let's say, have in common? And that's one of the things that terrified Senator Helms. You know, he just couldn't stand.
Why is he so terrified?
Well, because...
What can he stand?
Because male sexuality, for one thing, and male sensuality, for another thing. Those are some big taboos around here. And here are pictures of men with no clothes, and he's looking at them, and it's connected for him, I mean, with religion, because there are all those crosses hanging there, and then it's connected with money through the National Endowment, and it's connected to death through AIDS. So you have sex, religion, money, and death in this big package, and that was too much for him to handle, you know. And anyway, there's a little song for him in the show.
Have I heard it?
No.
Oh, I look forward to it then.
Yeah.
Which show, tonight or tomorrow?
I think it'll be in, I think I'll put it in tonight. They're actually quite similar, these two shows, in certain ways. Although tonight I'm going to be showing some video clips of this clone character. And tomorrow it's all the things with the big screens and things.
Uh-huh.
So.
Cool. Oh, yeah, see Big Science, the Hallelujah and Yodelayhu, and I was going to ask about... I thought, I pegged you as maybe being from New England because of this dry cynicism, kind of dry wit. And so did...
Kind of Mr. Magoo type?
Well, no.
No, he used to be very good, you know. He used to be a great curmudgeon. And then his character kind of got a little bit lost. And it was just
remember him being nearsighted.
Yeah. That's what the character turned into, unfortunately.
Extreme nearsightedness.
Right.
Nearsighted isn't
but
exactly
the word. But he used to,
word.
Like, do things. I was reminded of that because you said New England. And he used to, like, go up to a pump handle and shake it and go, oh, you must be from New England. You know, those New Englanders, they're taciturn, they're tight. You know, he thought he was shaking somebody's hand and he's pumping some water.
Well, so you were born in the Midwest?
Near Chicago, yeah.
And then what? Where'd you live?
Then I went to Mills for one miserable year. And, you know, but I guess a lot of freshmen in college are
what year was that?
That was 67. And then I came to New York and went to Barnard, which I really loved because it was just like being in New York and sort of go to the school on the side, sort of. And then I did some work as a sculptor and got my MFA at Columbia. Now, although I got kicked out a couple of times, actually. I wasn't making things that were big enough, you know. They figured that sculpture should mainly weigh a lot and be welded. You know.
Oh, yeah. That was the macho school, you know.
Yeah, you know. And
the guys.
The boys. And I was like making stuff out of paper, and that just wasn't heavy enough, you know.
Right. So so how long have you lived in New York?
Since then. So a real long time. And I like it a lot, although I've been passing through New Mexico lately and being very moved by that part of the country. You know, I just was through there in November and I just was overwhelmed by it. You know, this giant sky.
I know.
And to me, that's the perfect landscape, 180 degrees of sky.
I took the train out there.
Oh, yeah?
Just before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Mutual friends, Melody and Michael, are living there now.
Oh, really?
180. Yeah.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Near where? Oh, you have to give me their address.
Yes, I will. Okay. They would probably love to see you and talk to you about it. And yeah, it's quite amazing. But you know that there's always the downside is that this is the main place. It's so underpopulated that that's where the nuclear waste is being dumped. Seriously.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
The whole
that's true.
WIP program and all that, but
well, about a third of the state is testing.
Oh yeah,
And a third is reservations and
I know, I wonder about
parks.
And then the rest is utopia, you know. I just wonder about the drinking water there. Right. I mean, I don't know. Well, but still, you know.
The thing that I guess is a bit of a reservation for me is there's something so subtle about life forms in the desert that, you know, it's, I mean, that's very beautiful. But on the other hand, you know, artists who've gone there, Georgia O'Keeffe and Agnes Martin, there's something quite death-oriented about both of their work, which, you know, they're supposedly flowers, but they're disguised as skulls, you know. They're really...
Is she a painter, Agnes Martin?
Yeah.
And pretty abstract.
Grid things.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah. I was
very intellectual.
I was at a sculptor friend of Melody and Mike's, and he lives like maybe half a mile away from her place. Yeah. I hadn't heard of her, and he said, "You know, that's Agnes Martin's place." Mm-hmm. Amazing little section they all live in.
Yeah, but I guess the main thing is, you know, I was describing how wonderful I thought the desert was to a friend, and he said, "You know, I look out at the desert and I just see so much kitty litter."
Oh, God.
And I thought, oh, thanks a lot. This is really, you know, hundreds of miles of kitty litter just under the surface, you know, all this stuff. But I actually don't really feel that way. I went up to D.H. Lawrence's ranch, and I thought, I've never seen anything more beautiful.
Is that in New Mexico?
Mm-hmm. It's near, kind of near Taos. I'm going to be doing something there this summer at the Lama Foundation. And it's a community founded a long time ago by Ram Dass. It's one of those spiritual communities that still is working, you know. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And considering.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a few days of things about storytelling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not.
Storytelling. You are quite a storyteller. It's kind of fun hearing your stories.
Uh-huh.
I like the story about, well, it's coming out of the subway and saying, well, shall I go home now? No, I am home.
Oh, that's right.
That's very nice. Uh-huh. And the barbecuing.
Uh-huh.
All the barbecuers and the condos. The whole language is a virus thing is great. Because I met you once, I'm sure you don't remember, or maybe you want to forget it, and I said, you really are cute, you know, cute, cute.
Cute is a funny... Thanks so much.
Yeah, really. And that the word icon, you know, I've been reading, you know, in Vogue magazine, I think icon was in one issue, the word was in about five different articles, like Bill Blass, fashion icon. And it's so strange, like words, you know, they're just comprised of a few letters and things.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Can you just one second?
Okay, so let's move along, really. Yeah. Let me just ask sort of just some really quick questions.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah, go on.
What do you dream about?
I made the mistake of looking at the Serpent and the Rainbow on the bus, you know,
zombie
film.
Sure.
And our bus is made up of these really scary little bunk beds. So you see guys get nailed into their coffins and then resurrected. Then you go slip into this little coffin-like thing on the bus. And I had some bad dreams about snakes. But,
yeah, you use snakes quite a bit. Snakes and angels. And
yeah, they go together.
Do you work all the time?
I love working. I don't think of it as working.
Uh-huh.
I just do stuff all the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you play, what is that work? I mean, it's the same thing to you? Like, if you have a clear day ahead of you and you can do whatever you want, what do you do?
Probably get out my Video 8 camera and spook around. I love it. It's that one of those high band 8 cameras. Mm. Yeah.
Are you going to let your hair grow? I see it's quite long now.
It's just, I haven't been talking on the phone lately, and that's when I cut my hair, usually. I'm talking on the phone, like a nice long conversation with your sister or something.
Yeah.
So then you just get out some scissors and work on it while
I see.
On the phone. Otherwise, I don't cut it, I guess.
Why does it stand up? Did you put mousse on it or just stands like
Vaseline.
Oh, Vaseline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a quick fix.
Good, good. Well, give any advice to composers and to... Well, I want to know if you have advice for women, too. Because this is like women's International Women's Day. This program
oh, yeah?
is for. Yeah,
oh, great.
It is.
Speak Up is the main one.
Good.
Even though it's not, it doesn't seem like the right time. It definitely is. And as far as composers, boy, I don't know. I mean, I just always try to stay away from the big ideas initially, and I just try to work with what I've got. Real small things, you know, and just, if I don't have an idea, I just try to play with things and see what happens.
What's the first music you ever remember hearing?
Something called Letters to Daddy. No, Letters from Daddy was, that's right. It was a collection of 45s, and it was put out during World War II, and for some reason we had a stack of these, and it was a guy who was in the Army writing to Mommy and the two girls, and I thought, wow, that's just like me and my sister. My dad wasn't away in the war when I was around, but I loved these records because the spoken letters are just wonderful. I love to hear that kind of thing out loud. Letters out loud.
What are some of the artists, who are some of the artists that you most admire?
Well, right now I think of Robert Mapplethorpe. I also really admired Van Gogh very much.
So did I.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Top of the list.
That story about the Laurie clone in one of the songs, is that true?
Yeah, unfortunately it was. And then I decided to sort of just try to clone myself. And I came up with this male character. And, he's going to be around tonight. But that was who I thought, you know, I was using this filter as a kind of authority filter. And then I thought, I wonder what he looks like. That's why I did that. And he turned out to be 3 feet tall, size one shoes, you know.
Size one.
Yeah. But he's, it's interesting to find your alter ego. That's who he turned out to be.
So what about women and men? Are men our pals, our friends, our enemies, all of the above, none of the above, what?
Are women and men?
Yeah. Relationship between women
well,
and
I
men.
Well, I think it's easier, actually, in the United States for women, for example, to have male friends. Because things aren't so defined like as in Europe. Well, you look at a restaurant scene in Europe, and there's the woman and the man and the waiter, for example. The man's paying the bill, the woman is looking beautiful, and the waiter is being subservient. And here, you know, like, well, take San Francisco.
Here the waiter's bossing you around.
The waiter is telling you his latest script. You know, the woman is paying, and the man is, you know, talking about the wine. It's just much wackier. The roles are less defined, and I really enjoy that.
You like it out here?
I do.
Well, come and live here. We'd like to have you.
Thanks.
Well, thanks very, very much.
You're welcome. I gotta go find someone who's waiting for me downstairs.
Okay.
But this is fun.
Good.
Women's Day.